France has nurtured one of the world's most significant movie industries. The country can lay claim to having invented motion pictures. It was the site of the first commercial screening of a movie. The first woman filmmaker, Alice Guy Blaché, directed her first film in 1896. And at the start of the 20th century, Georges Méliès pioneered special effects and produced the first science fiction films.
So what do you expect to see when watching a French film? You know, what are the distinct qualities we can recognize or look for, characteristics, besides perhaps the obvious physical setting of Paris?
Well, Paris and other places, too. I mean, I think there's been an effort among French filmmakers in recent decades to get beyond Paris to show other parts of the country less recognized. And I think we can recognize that same impulse here in American filmmaking. Why does everything have to be New York or Los Angeles? Why not Milwaukee or Chicago, for that matter? So that's going on. But, I mean, to your point, French film is a vast subject, and it covers virtually every genre, except I think really superhero movies, which are just
true
extremely expensive, and America has the lock on that, the patent on it anyway. There are good, bad, and mediocre French films, and every shade in between. I think that there is a tendency toward intelligence, that French films tend to be, you know, a bit smarter maybe than, in some way, than many Hollywood films. Also, certainly before the mid-1960s, French films and the films of many European countries were much more sexually frank than Hollywood films were. They tended to delve into issues a little more deeply than Hollywood, because Hollywood operated under a very rigid self-censorship code, and the French film industry was much looser in what it could do.
I also think that compared to perhaps the standard American escapism when it came to movies, even in the 1950s and 60s, French films often have that element of self-reflection, whether it's the character or making the audience think.
Well, when a film is an escapist film, and maybe MLA is in some way, I think it's aware of itself as an escapist film. It's making a comment in a way. Maybe the French were way ahead of Americans with irony and appreciating that.
Yeah, I also think, especially with Amelie that we'll be talking about, there's a charm and whimsy full in this movie.
Yeah, and I'm going to have to admit that when I reviewed the movie when it was released in 2001, I gave it a scathingly negative review. And when the DVD came out later that year or next year, I reluctantly watched it and I changed my mind completely. And I think I was guilty of doing something that many critics do at some point or other, and I try not to do it, but I fell prey. Jean-Pierre Genet, the director, had done some much darker movies prior to that time, and I was expecting dark, and I get Emily, and I think I was just kind of disappointed and flabbergasted, and it didn't meet my preconceptions, but I'm happy it didn't. He set out to make what he called a positive story instead of the kinds of things that he normally had been working on. The movie Amelie looks a lot like his previous films in terms of being very visually overloaded intentionally. But according to him, the movie Amelie is kind of an emotional autobiography of moving to Paris in the 1970s for him and experiencing the city. I'm not quite sure where he came from, somewhere in provincial France, but he had the same kind of sense of wonder and awe that many people have when going there. And some of the stories in the film were collected from people he met or people he knew. So he assembled this kind of fascinating patchwork together about life in Paris at some indeterminate time in human history.
Yeah, it almost hops between time and generations, because at one point you could think that you're watching the French equivalent of Roman Holiday, but then you see a photocopier somewhere.
Yeah, it intentionally destroys the sense of chronology. I could term it retro. I mean, it's kind of retro for the most part in appearance, but not quite. It's sort of mid-20th century, but not exactly. It really is evoking a Paris of the imagination, a Paris more beautiful and wonderful than any Paris at any time could possibly have been. And I think that the director succeeded very well in achieving that.
Yeah, it's slick, it's fast, it's quirky. It's a feel-good fantasy that follows a woman who is overall a very introverted person due to her upbringing, who it's suddenly her life's work to make everyone happy through various plots and schemes.
Yes, and I think she's made film audiences around the world very happy.
So do you recall any specific criticisms or words you had when you first reviewed this movie?
I thought there was an excess of whimsy, and maybe sometimes I'm a little skeptical of whimsy when it goes too far. My appetite for it isn't as great as it should be, maybe. So I think that was my main criticism of it. Was just, but, you know, this is intelligent whimsy. It was whimsy well thought out, well visualized, well put together, well enacted, and fine. I mean, maybe if I would have to make the five greatest whimsical movies of all time, this and maybe, I don't know, The Wizard of Oz.
Right. Before we get to some of the other French films, I'm curious, did this style of filmmaking, or did the standard start with the French New Wave cinema? You had a big amount of pictures released between 1958 and 1963. We had 170 French filmmakers directed their first feature. So that's definitely a flood of movies in a short period of time.
Well, the French New Wave movement is interesting because it got underway during the 50s and was launched by and large by film critics who decided that, first of all, they worked out a kind of aesthetic or ideology of filmmaking, and it's not good enough just to write about this. Let's do it ourselves. They were able to do it themselves because of advances in technology allowing for more portable cameras, lighting equipment that you could move around more. And then there was the sensibility, too, of catching the real environment in which things would take place, even though many of these movies definitely try to deconstruct or subvert the normal sense of realism that you would get in watching a movie.
One of those films, Breathless, is almost a quintessential example of a new wave crime drama written and directed by Jean-Luc Godard. So what kind of ideas and innovations did Godard bring to the film industry?
Well, the opening credit dedicated to Monogram Pictures. What's Monogram Pictures? A very low-budget, third-rate edge of Hollywood studio back in the 1940s and so on. He was, you know, again, in a loving and ironic way, you know, tipping his hat to Pulp Fiction, things that might be considered trashy in some way. So this movie was a commentary on American crime drama and film noir, respectful but yet disrespectful. The major character in the film, Michel, is kind of a preposterous caricature of a tough guy in many ways. The female character in the movie is treated, I think, with greater depth than you would have found in American movies of that type from the era. And the editing of it is very ragged looking at times, maybe intentionally, maybe not. There is a sense of the reality of real environments on the streets of Paris, and yet things that just don't are too fantastic that are occurring there that you wouldn't find occurring there in real life. It's just this strange collision of heightened realism and a sense of the fantasy world of Hollywood somehow coming together in a Paris setting.
What ideas or thoughts did you revisit as you watched this again after, you know, you and I have talked about obviously more recent movies, but to take the time to sit down and watch this movie again?
Well, I think I understood the irony of it much better. I saw it for the first time on the big screen somewhere. I think it may have been when I was running the Film Society at UWM. I may have just booked it because I knew it was a classic film, and that may have been where I saw it for the first time, and I was very young, and I was just kind of, oh. I hadn't seen as many of the films that influenced Godard by that point. I think maybe that's where my different perspective comes in. Now that I've seen many of the things that influenced him, I understand better where he was coming from. And also in recent years, or last couple of decades, I can see the way that Breathless has influenced Quentin Tarantino and maybe a whole generation of American so-called indie directors for the sense of, again, the ironic take on Hollywood movie conventions, the mobility of the film, you know, catching something very much on the fly, being able to do it at a very low budget. All of these things, I think, had a delayed impact on American filmmakers.
Right, because in France, you can go to any number of indie movie theaters.
Yeah, you can. I mean, the French government or quasi-governmental agencies subsidized the French film industry to a great degree because they recognized film as being an integral part of the culture of France. And that's not just some sideshow entertainment thing or a business. It's important to the country's national identity. And French films are, you know, an export market. Half of Africa uses French as one of the official languages. There are islands in the Caribbean, province of Quebec, parts of Switzerland and Belgium. The Francophone world is much larger than many people think it is. And there are French film festivals in America, including one in Milwaukee every February.
One film that our listeners may be the most familiar with regarding French film is The Artist, which, you know, at the time would have been an unlikely winner of Best Picture, Best Director, in 2011 for a black and white silent film.
The first silent film to win an Oscar since the very first Oscar Awards in 1927.
Yeah.
I mean, this film is a whole bunch of footnotes in cinema history, really. It was not the only black and white silent film produced in the world around that period of time. For some reason, there was a little ripple of these kinds of movies from different countries. I'm not quite sure what the zeitgeist was that resulted in that, but this movie, in its own way, is also a look at Hollywood from distant eyes. The story takes place in Hollywood in the late 1920s and early 30s, during the time of, you know, many people are familiar with Singing in the Rain, the time of transition from silent to sound, in which many stars couldn't make the transition because their voices sounded funny or because in some cases the Hollywood studios wanted to clean house and get rid of troublesome people. So, we don't like the way you sound on your soundtrack, so we're going to get rid of you and relieve you of your contract. So, yeah, this movie, unlikely, you know, an outlier really in filmmaking in so many ways, it won Best Picture, Best Director, Best Actor, first French actor ever to win in that category. So it swept the imagination of the Academy of Motion Pictures during that year and tantalized a great many people worldwide.
Yeah, I remember seeing it at the Downer, and that was the perfect setting for a silent black and white film. You know, it's like you were transported. I imagine the experience would have been different, say, had I gone to a Cineplex place. But
yeah, the Downer, Oriental, or Avalon, I think if you were going to pick a place to see a movie like this, those would be the venues you'd hope to find it in, because it transports you so entirely into the kind of environment where this sort of filmmaking was greened at the time.
Do you think that French films do have a reverence for cinema history that they want to incorporate versus, you know, what we need nowadays is prequels, sequels, revamping ideas already done, or an overstimulation in some points?
Well, yes, I think that a respect, reverence, and knowledge of film history is very important in France. You know, one of the earliest collections of film, you know, it was assembled in Paris during the 1950s and 60s, which allowed people, filmmakers, film critics, and just the public to watch movies that were unavailable at a time before home movies. There was an enormous collection of cinema tech or whatever, I think, I'm forgetting the name of it now, but was a well-known institution in which many French filmmakers really learned about the history of film by immersing themselves in it. And sitting in a seat in a theater watching it on the big screen is a far more engrossing experience, I think, than flipping through it on your DVD player where you can fast forward and flip to the next scene if you're getting bored or walk out of the room and so on. I mean, I think that entire generations of French filmmakers really learned a lot by watching these movies carefully.
Audiences in Milwaukee will be able to see Amelie on the big screen rather than, you know, streaming on Netflix. What's the case that you would make for someone to go see this in that form, whether they've, you know, it's been a few years since they've seen it, since its release, or if they've never seen it before?
Well, it's at the Avalon Theater, so you're getting a beautiful retro environment for it, getting back to that point. But also the film is so visually rich that sitting back, relaxing in a chair and seeing it on a gigantic screen allows you to really pick out and appreciate some of the work that went into furnishing the scenes. The whole milieu of it is just so well put together that watching it at home on a smaller screen, I think that you may miss quite a few things.
Well, Dave, thanks for coming in to talk about French films. I feel like I wish I had a college course in it.
Thank you.